Hey friends, how we doing? Welcome back to the show. I know the podcast's been a bit hit or miss, we'll say, over the past few months. And the reason for that is because of the very thing I want to tell you about today. I have had inside of my soul this book that I had to write. If you've listened to the podcast for any period of time, you know that I love this line by Joan Chittister. In this moment is the essence of everything glorious I've been given in life, and it's enough. I've talked about it. I've referenced it. I once even had a podcast with Joan Chittister scheduled simply because of that quote. And then we had like technical difficulties, and then it just like never got rescheduled. But this idea of in this moment, right here, right now, is the essence of everything glorious I've been given in life, and it's enough. This has been like at the heart of where I want to go, and I wanted to go there because it seemed like it was a much better place than where I was. And probably 5 or 6 years ago, Jay Miller and I were on a trip with Telos, and we were in like Joppa, I think is where it was. I think it's one of the stories, like a city in the story of Jonah somewhere. I think that's what it was. And I remember talking with him there, and he's like, I think there's more to this quote for you. I'm pretty sure I use it in my book, Befriending the Monsters. And like he was right. There was this book that was my way of putting skin on like this journey that I had been on, where I have so many reasons to be deeply aware of this moment, having everything glorious I've been given and having more than enough. But I always had this perpetual, yeah, but if I could just get there and if I could just do, and if I just acquired and I just had it, it's almost just like a bass note, right? That's just boom, boom, boom. Like it's just always there. Part of it obviously is being Enneagram 7, but part of it is just being a person where there's always this like, hey, someplace else there's going to be something that's going to feel like your home and you finally arrived. And like it began this process of like internal inspection of me. And I spent a couple years writing this, and then I remember a Thursday before Easter, Monday, Thursday, if you're into that Holy Week language, I sat with in my truck after having a phone call with a publisher the day before, and I was talking to someone who was helping me at that time get this book published, and we were just expecting, you know, an update on the contract, because while this wasn't my first option, it was the last option at the time. And they said, oh yeah, by the way, like the idea, but it seems like he's kind of set in his ways, and you know, we're going to end up just passing on the book. And I was just like taken aback. I just didn't like think that was going to happen. And I didn't have any other offers. Like that was the last publisher that I pitched the book to. And I've been writing this book for 2 or 3 years at that point, and I had a lot of the book done, and I just got lost. Like I didn't know what to do. And so I didn't write and finish the book on sabbatical like I imagined to. And like not writing that Thursday and then not writing the following week on sabbatical turned into not writing the next month and the next month. And then almost a year later, I just stopped writing. And something happened with me that when I wasn't writing, because part of what writing is for me is like this exploration to understand the world, to understand God, to understand myself. And when I stopped looking, what I found was something that I definitely wasn't looking for. There was a lot going on. Obviously, you know, COVID's in the background, and you know, that was complicated for everyone who's in any sort of leadership position, especially in a religious setting like a church. My mom had passed away before. You know, unbeknownst to me at the time, I didn't have language for it, but I was entering what a lot of people talk about, this like 38 to 43 is like this really transformative, like entrance into second half of life stuff, which I didn't know at the time what I was going through. And I had this book that I wasn't working on anymore that was about loving the life that you already have. And In many ways, I stopped writing because I didn't love this one facet of the life that I had. I didn't love that, oh, I didn't get the book deal. And so I was like, I gave up, really. But the beautiful thing about something you're called to is that even if you stop answering, it doesn't mean it stops ringing. And there was this thing that I know I just had to do. And so I got back to it and spent the next 2 years rewriting this book and rewriting what I've been learning and rewriting the things that were going on within me and naming some of these things and learning and talking to people. And there's this new concept that was formed that to love the life you already have is that you have to learn to become the person that life is demanding for you to be. Because one of the things about life is that it is always asking. It's like the curious kid. He's like, what's that for? Why do we do this? What's going on there? What's down there? What's up there? If we did this, what would happen? And if you're a parent or you have a little sibling or you have a little kid in your life who's peppered you with questions, you know there's a point where you just cross a line and you just start making stuff up. You say things like, well, you know, that's how God made it. Or because I said so is kind of like the ultimate last one. It's like, because I said so, that's why we always do this. And what that usually is just an expression that you no longer are willing to answer the question. And the thing about life is always questioning you. And the questions that life asks are, what are you going to do when your career doesn't look the way you expected it to look? What are you going to do in life, professional life, as you constructed it in your mind, never comes to fruition? Life questions you and says, what are you going to do when you look in the mirror and you realize that you aren't nearly the person that you thought you would be? Life asks you, what are you going to do when you understand that the people that you love the most don't stay with you forever? Life questions and forces you to answer the question, are you ever going to let someone see who you actually are? Or are you content to live in isolation? Life is going to ask you, when you are forced to deal with the arduous, unwieldy task of being who you are in this world, are you going to continue to get up every day and check in and do the work and fight? Or are you eventually going to just become a shell of yourself? What are you going to do when life hands you disappointments that you have to carry around? What are you going to do? And what I realize is that life is a persistent asker of questions. And for many of us, we've continued to ask life to give us what we want. And instead, life is asking us, will you become the kind of person who can flourish in the circumstances that you have? Here's why. Because we can't make and demand for life to give us the circumstances that we want, but we can develop the character that our circumstances require and demand of us to have. You can't get life to give you the good life as you imagined it, like where everything's perfect, and your home life, and your work life, and your health, and your finances, and all your friends. Like, you can't expect life to give you that. But what you can trust is that there is this force that is working within you to enable you to become the kind of person that can carry the weight of the disappointments of life, the grief that you carry. There is a force that enables you to be that version. There's a version of you that can become connected to others so that you don't see them with judgment and you aren't afraid to have the vulnerability to be seen honestly. There's a force at work within you that is enabling you to see the brevity of life, to understand that your life isn't forever and the people that you love, their life isn't forever, and to see that not as something that turns you into despair and a shell of yourself, but that can be the very driving force to savor the life that you've been given. Because life is always asking the question. But the hope and the good news that we have is that there is a force at work within us, what Christianity refers to as the Spirit, that is enabling you to become the kind of person that your life demands for you to have. And it might not happen overnight, but you can trust that this force is at work within you, making you become who you need to be. My wife is a perfectionist, which has served her well. As a neonatal ICU nurse, it requires perfectionism. It serves her well professionally. It served her well 20 years ago when she was searching for a husband. I'm just joking. She would definitely not say that. Actually, this morning, my perfectionist wife said, "Luke, you are using a dog towel for your towel. We do not do that. Stop being dumb." So she definitely doesn't think her husband is perfect. But she has this perfectionism that displays itself whenever she's outside, where she can't not like pick up a leaf, or if there's a weed in the front yard, she has to pull it. If there's a leaf in the flower bed, she's going to grab it. She is, this is her thing. Like, she just does this. Many times she'll come home from working a night shift and she'll get two handfuls of leaves and just walk inside because she can't leave them on the sidewalk in front of her. That's who she is. And so maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we had this big 25-foot tree in our front yard that was killed in an ice storm that happened in Austin. The tree died, and one day I came home from work, and this 25-foot tall tree that was dead but still in our front yard was just gone. And I at least had to entertain the idea that my wife literally cut this down with her own bare hands, because she does that kind of stuff. But it wasn't. I went inside and she said, "Hey, I got a great deal." But the deal was so great financially because they left a stump. And she said, "Which means I need you to dig out the stump on Saturday." To which I said, "Oh, I can't wait. Wonderful." So I dig out the stump on Saturday. I literally tried to use a sledgehammer at first because I didn't have an axe. And I broke my sledgehammer, which was really a shame because I used that for working out. And now I don't. So, you know, sad times. And so eventually I dig out this sledge with this, axe, I dig out the stump, I shovel the rest of it out, and then we fill it in with dirt. And what happened next surprised me with my perfectionist wife, because my wife on multiple occasions has taken my truck, loaded it down with, grass squares. And she would do this like while I'm at work. But she did this once when I was working from home like 10 years ago, and I was at like working at home, but I couldn't stop working because I had work to do. And she just does this and I'm not helping. And so all my neighbors think I'm just like the worst husband in the world because she does that, because that's who she is. She just gets things done. But the weirdest thing happened after I dug this stump out. It was a small patch of grass that was needed to fill this, this dirt knoll. We'll call it a dirt knoll in our front yard. That's not a correct term, but we're going to go with it. It would have taken four squares, but she didn't. Instead, she planted seed and just religiously watered this patch of dirt until it became lush green grass that matched the rest of the front yard. And I never asked her why she did that. To this day, do not know why she did that, because I kind of like the mystery of that woman. But I think there's something that was motivating her, about something that's fulfilling and meaningful, about seeing the work actually come to harvest in front of your eyes. It's not a quick fix, like putting grass squares down, but it's something that slowly grows right before your eyes. And you might not actually notice the moment when all of a sudden the dirt is gone and the grass fills the spot, but you look back one day and go, wow, that's exactly what it needs to be. And what I would say to you, because I bet there's a part of your life where you go, this is definitely not where it's supposed to be. And I carry this conflict within me because I can't seem to make this right. What I would like to say to you is that the Spirit, which is at work within you, developing and forming and shaping that character that enables you to become the version of yourself that can love the life that you already have, is working in a similar form and fashion. Where it might not happen in a moment where you look down and go, all of a sudden, this gap within my soul, this conflict, because this area of my life isn't ideal, or this isn't the good life like I imagined it, but eventually something is going to form within you. where in spite of the distance between the ideal life you'd like to have and the real life that you do have, you would notice that there is character that is formed within you that's okay with it, that there is a peace because you can love the life you already have. And it might not happen overnight, but one day you'll look down and go, yeah, I'm here and I love exactly what my life is. And I think that's what the power of hope in the Spirit is that every one of us has that force inside of us that's at work, and we have the opportunity to choose to be a part of that or not. And ultimately, this book that I wrote, it's entitled How to Love the Life You Already Have, A Guide to Become the Person That Life is Demanding You Be, is trying to tell that story. And so the book comes out today, Monday morning. You get it on Kindle. You get it on a paperback version, but you go to Amazon, you can order it. And I'd love for you to do that. I think you're going to, well, I don't know if you're going to like it or not. I hope you do. It's a weird process writing this without a big publisher. It's a book that I self-published, and I had a lot of friends and a lot of people who invested in me in this project, and I'm deeply grateful for them. And it would mean the world to me if you went out and bought a copy, and then if you went and left a nice review on Amazon. Amazon reviews make a big difference. So if you would be so kind to buy a copy and then leave a review, that would mean the world to me. I have a Audible version that I'm working on that hopefully will be out. I've recorded all of the actual audio. We're just cleaning it up. And so hopefully in the next 2 weeks or so, we're going to have that version available to you. But what I might do now is just play a little clip, a little bit more about the book. And if you want to listen to that, go for it. But podcast, we're going to be cranking out some more episodes on a more consistent basis going forward here to forth. And yeah, so all that to say, thank you for those of you who've asked about the podcast, who've checked in on me, who've been wondering what's going on. The answer is it's this book, and it's been a long journey to get here, but I hope it's meaningful to people who read it as much as it's been meaningful to me to write it. And again, it would mean the world to me if you got a copy, if you shared it on social media, left a nice review on Amazon. But without further ado, here's a little bit more about the book, and you can listen to me reading some of it right now. I've got a magic trick for you. It's the oldest one in the book, where two different entities become one. First, we take the life that you would love to have, the one that's marked by optimism for the future, positive memories of the past, and happiness in the present, the one where your deepest aspirations become reality. Your family life flows with a warm and supportive ease. Your faith feels like one answered prayer after another. Your work is meaningful and lucrative, and you hit your financial and fitness goals without fail. In this ideal life, you are healthy and happy, just as you've always wanted. Next, we step back to take a look at the life that you already have. As you examine your real life, you notice it's inevitably marked by too much anxiety for the future, regret of the past, and self-doubt in the present. Maybe there's a persistent inability to make your work life feel like anything other than a frustrating and futile attempt to get a paycheck. Maybe your home houses more conflict than comfort. Maybe your faith leaves you with more haunting questions than uplifting answers. And maybe your financial and or physical situation create more nagging stress than exciting opportunities. We're going to spend the rest of this book taking those two lives, the life you would love to have and the life you already have, and we're going to magically make them one. But be warned, the secret for this magic trick will sound a bit underwhelming. The secret is accepting that life will never give you all the circumstances that you demand, but you can develop the character that your circumstances demand of you. For you to love the life you already have, what must change first isn't the version of the life that you have, but the version of yourself that inhabits your life. Because flourishing isn't about your external circumstances. Flourishing is about your internal character. And the true secret to experiencing flourishing is learning to tap into the force that enables you to develop the character that your life demands for you to have. Life being the capricious dealer of circumstances that it is, doesn't make the same demand of all. Some circumstances demand greater character than other circumstances. And yet all will face their own demands. We all must learn to stop asking life for what we want from it and instead learn to listen for what life is asking from us. Viktor Frankl, the Austrian psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor, wrote about his experience in Nazi concentration camps. We had to learn ourselves, and further, we had to teach the despairing men that it did not really matter what we expected from life, but rather what life expected from us. We needed to stop asking about the meaning of life and instead to think of ourselves as those who were being questioned by life daily and hourly. Life questions everyone. Life demands for you to become the person who can be fully present while carrying whatever unwieldy weight life has placed upon you. Life demands for you to choose isolation or connection, resentment or forgiveness, despair or hope, flourishing or death. Life demands for you to grow to become the type of person who can endure disappointments. Life demands for you to decide if the core of your existence will be striving to be enough, or will the core of your existence be constructed around receiving the freely given gift of being alive. Life demands for us to choose merit or grace. And the secret to answering these demands of life is finding the spirit that enables you to become the version of yourself that your circumstances require you to be. My friend Seth had just arrived in Austin to celebrate our mutual friend Jason's 40th birthday. We sat in my favorite pizza spot getting the weekend's plans finalized. Since we were sharing an Airbnb, I asked Seth when he usually wakes up. He said 4 a.m., an answer which demanded follow-up questions. Here's the story I got from Seth. The recent birth of his fourth, but first unexpected, child was a personal awakening. In the words of the comedian Jim Gaffigan, what's having four kids like? Well, imagine you were drowning and then someone hands you a baby. Seth realized that the person he had been wasn't keeping him above water, so he overhauled his life. He required 2.5 hours of meditation, reading, and exercise to make himself available for the spirit's transformation within him, hence the 4 a.m. alarm. He stopped his already moderate and acceptable drinking habits as a way to remove any hindrance to him being fully present. He decided to go back to school while still working full-time to advocate for improved future professional possibilities. He did all this so that he could become what he called Seth 2.0. When life demanded a better version of Seth, he said yes. He might have preferred easier circumstances, but instead he chose to accept life's demands for improved character. Jesus said no one can enter the kingdom of God without first being reborn. In the same way, no one can love the life they already have without first experiencing a rebirth into the next version of themselves. The old version must die so that we can be reborn into who our life demands for us to be. As Henry Cloud wrote, the mature person meets the demands of life, while the immature person demands that life meet her demands. The most essential life goal isn't to acquire our desired circumstance. The essential goal is to acquire the character life demands. Life's true goal isn't for an easy burden, but for stronger shoulders. Life always puts demands upon us. It demands that we choose how we carry our disappointments, how honestly we allow ourselves to be seen by our loved ones, and how we accept the all too fleeting nature of our life. The immature person demands they wouldn't be required to face these challenges. The mature person sees these demands as an invitation to acquire the character life demands of them, just like my friend Jeff. During one of my Thursday sermon focus groups with 5 church members, I played a rather ridiculous TikTok video that I planned to use in a sermon 3 days later of a hilarious English guy narrating his fleeting feelings while watching an intricate domino display collapsing. The capriciousness of the young Brit's feelings, which bounced from happy to angry back to giddy almost as fast as each domino fell, seemed to be an accurate illustration for how many of our attitudes fluctuate with the ebbs and flows of our circumstances. We bounce from emotions as rapidly as our circumstances change. After finishing the sermon, I asked their thoughts on how accurate that video communicated the fleeting nature of our emotions. Jeff, a 76-year-old man with a warm smile and a kind spirit, said that he didn't personally connect to the video, saying it just didn't work for him. The other four people in the room disagreed with Jeff, saying that it made sense to them. All four were younger than Jeff. Unsurprisingly, Jeff humbly listened to their counterfeedback and then gently responded by saying that there's just something about getting older that has you not so taken with what's right in front of you. I think the video didn't work for Jeff as it did for the other people in the room because over the years, he's been given multiple invitations to mature into the version of himself that's more grounded than the one so connected to what's right in front of him. Life hasn't always been easy for Jeff. Life demanded that he grow, and he accepted the invitation. As Jesus prepared to depart from earth, he told Peter, his close friend and disciple, the troubling way that Peter's life would end. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your seatbelt, your own belt, and to go where you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go. While most will not be martyred for their faith like Peter, we all at some point in life end up going where we do not wish to go. Some have the ability to control large parts of their life, charming, buying, or strong-arming their way out of many of life's troubles. But eventually, all of our attempts at control will be revealed for what they truly are, an illusion. As we all at one point or another have to go where we don't wish to go, the illusion of control fades, but the magic of developing the character life demands of you remains. So even when you go where you do not wish to go, you can still love the life you already have. But we don't create this magic. The magic comes from beyond us. Martin Luther King Jr. popularized the idea of 19th century preacher Theodore Parker as he said, "The moral arc of the universe is long but bends towards justice." The force that bends the universe towards a just and right future is also at work bending you towards a more just and right version of yourself. The one who created you also invites you to be your truest self through the Spirit. While life demands, the Spirit doesn't. The Spirit simply offers to encourage the fruit of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control to emerge within you so that you can accept life's demands. Life is demanding, but hopefully, because the Spirit that empowers you to love the life you already have is ready and willing to help. Like Dr. King, I believe that force to be revealed to us in the person of Jesus of Nazareth. I write this book from the perspective of one shaped by Jesus's teaching. But I know not all of you have the same perspective. For those of you not connected to Christianity, this book is both a guidebook to help you become who your life is demanding for you to be, and also my attempt to describe what human flourishing looks like from my tradition as a follower of Jesus. Miroslav Volf, the Croatian theologian who directs the Yale Center for Faith and Culture, stated that in our pluralistic society, we all, from our different faiths, must lay claim for the good life. It is to that aim that I intend to envision for you how the way of Jesus can enable you to flourish. Along the way, I hope you will find that the journey to love your life is also the journey to encounter the one who gifted you your life. Life makes six demands of everyone. Here's a quick overview of the six sections of the book, which is built around the six demands. First, life demands that we decide what resides at the core of our existence. Is the essence of our existence built upon striving, achieving, and merit, or is the core of our existence receiving a freely given gift of grace? Everything flows from how we answer this question. If the answer is striving, then we are never right enough to be loved. If it's grace, then we are never too unrighteous to be loved. Second, life demands that we carry the inevitable disappointments. Will the disappointments make us devolve into a bitter shell of ourselves, or will we harness grief as the means to be reborn into the version of ourself that can carry the weight of disappointment? Will disappointment reduce our vision to seeing only how we've been hurt, Or will we lean into the power from above that enables us to transcend our hurt through forgiveness? Third, life demands that we live within community. As isolation rates increase in our society, we continue to experience the evergreen wisdom from the ancient words of Scripture that it's not good for a man or woman to be alone. So will we develop the strength to be fully seen so we can experience the abundance that only occurs in community? Will we be relegated to isolation because we've succumbed to judging others, or will we develop a curiosity to see more than just their shortcomings? Fourth, life demands that we make peace with the brevity of life. Despite our best attempts, our life and the lives of those we love don't last forever. Will this fleeting nature of our existence drive us to despair, or will it drive us to savor the joys of this life? Will the brevity of life teach us to focus on the temporary gifts or the eternal giver? Fifth, life demands that we fight for our flourishing. Not as a way to make our life lovable, but as an expression of the love that we already have for our life. As an expression of gratitude, will we advocate for our life? Will we express our love by intentionally fighting against the ego, which doesn't want to grow? Will we fight to take captive our thoughts so our thoughts don't take us captive? Will we fight for how we are called to give our life away? Or will the brokenness of life leave us closed off and unable to give our gift to the world? Finally, life demands that we become the type of person who can be fully present to our reality. Being present isn't a momentary choice, but the result of many choices in the past. To learn to be present isn't a decision one makes in the moment, but rather it's the cumulative effect of saying yes to all the demands life gave us leading up to right now. To meet the first five demands enables us to meet the final demand of being present. Will we grow into the version of ourselves that meets the demands so we can be fully available with gratitude for today? Or will we be resigned to living somewhere other than the here and right now? As you begin this book, please know that I'm grateful for you. I'm truly thankful for you entrusting me with your time. And I pray that it is as life-giving for you to read this book as it has been for me to write this book. And most of all, I pray that you become the version of yourself that can love the life you already have. All right, friends, that's the intro to the book. I hope it connected to you. Anyway, the book's out now. Go get a paper copy. Go get the Kindle. Go get them both, honestly. And then in a few weeks when the audio version is out, get that, because, you know, God is three in one. So maybe the Trinitarian thing to do is to get three copies of one book. That's probably not true, but I do have three daughters. So, you know, my daughter Audrey has been praying for the book, which is hilarious to me. And so we pray at night and she goes, dear God, please help Daddy to sell a lot of copies of his book. And I was like, well, I'll be honest, like I've never prayed for me to sell many copies of my book. I've been praying that like it's like I'm faithful to what I'm called to do. I pray that like it encourages someone, that it's life-giving to someone else. But I just don't ever pray that way. And she was saying, well, here's the thing, Dad. If you sell lots of copies, then I get more money. Because if you make money, Dad, I get to spend it. So anyway, that's my daughter. I feel like there's some life lessons that maybe I need to teach her. But nevertheless, the book is out and Audrey would be happy if you bought a copy, and I would be happy for you just listening. Anyway, thanks for your time. Appreciate y'all. And next week, we got my guy, Steve Carter, back on the podcast. He's got a brilliant new book and I can't wait for y'all to hear more about it because it's really good. Anyway, that's next week in the podcast. This week, how to love the life you already have.